what's the agenda? Hey! Hey! Excuse me? What was that? I tell you what the agenda is when I'm ready to tell you the agenda.
Sir, yes, sir.
Yeah. What was that? What's the agenda? So our friends over at PC Zone, they think, they have reason to believe that Gordon Freeman is gay. Because he doesn't, well, okay, he doesn't do it with Alex, and we've had 3 episodes. And also, the symbol, as you know, the Half-Life Lambda symbol was, at one time, the dominant symbol for gay pride. Do we have a surprise coming in episode 3?
Whoa.
Yes or no?
Interesting.
Yes. Somebody says yes. Who was that?
Yeah, that was me.
Pritis says yes.
Yeah.
Anybody? Big plot twist.
I don't know. He's leading Alex on. You've got a point there.
Yeah. And the father did seem very comfortable with, like, please take care of my daughter. Like, there was no issue there at all.
All I'll say is that his goatee is meticulously well-groomed.
That is true. That is true. That says a bunch, really.
I'm thinking maybe secret Vortigaun relationships here.
Whoa!
Controversial.
Wow. That was out of left field. All right. Okay, that was our little intro.
Welcome to episode 194 of the PC Gamer Podcast for October 8th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and with me today in the PC Gamer AV Lounge are reviews editor and ultimate bat fighter, Dan Stapleton.
No one can challenge me.
No, really, they can't. Not yet.
Well, no one's really gotten around to it, is the thing.
Associate editor and mild-mannered homicidal maniac, Evan Lottie.
Hey there, guys. I haven't killed any bats yet.
He's an attempted homicidal maniac. There's a distinction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Intern, and you only have one pancreas, Chief Medical Officer Eric Balsas. Balsas.
Yeah, I still can't believe you thought humans had 2 pancreases, Logan.
Then why do they put an S on it? Why don't they call it the pancrea, you know? Intern, can't find my fake ID, Prentice Getty.
Yep. What's up, guys?
And finally, the incomparable Master of Podcasts, Andy Bell.
Wow. Master of podcasts.
Absolutely.
Awesome, dude.
Might I compare thee to a summer's day, Andy? Because then you'd be comparable.
Wow.
I have proven him comparable.
Can I be a winter's day with snow?
No, that was sweet and yet still a takedown. It was a pretty amazing move. Coming up on today's show, PC Gamers hands-on with Left 4 Dead 2's new scavenge mode, Randy Pitchford doesn't trust Valve, The Escapist puts the gay in gamer, and a comeback on the horizon from an early PC gaming legend. But first, a horrifying video game with real-life consequences. No, it's not a Twilight video game. Lose/Lose by Zach Gage over at stfj.net is a simple Galaxians-ish arcade game with a gripping twist. Every time you shoot an alien, a random file on your hard drive gets deleted. If you don't shoot, on the other hand, and the aliens touch you, the game deletes itself.
I think I would opt to lose that.
Now, to me, this game is kind of like a grizzly bear. I don't want to see one myself, but for some reason, I'm glad to know it's out there.
Wow.
You know, wandering around.
Well, that's some high stakes gaming right there.
I know. That's the highest stakes gaming. It could be a DLL file you'll never use or need. Or.
So wait a minute. If you shoot something and kill it, it deletes your files.
Yeah, you can't win.
Yep.
You can't win.
Because
lose.
I think maybe a point is that, okay, so there are aliens. Why do you have to shoot them?
Right, well, if they touch you, it deletes the game. So the incentive is just not like if they touch you and hurt you, then it deletes your files. I would understand it.
Have you heard of postmodernism, Dan?
You know, you can hear Dan's brain folding as he talks sometimes.
The little
curves multiplying.
It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand the incentive to win the game. I mean, to me, winning the game is getting that horrendous program off my computer.
But isn't that what the gods are saying about us as they look down?
Probably
like, what
not.
Is the point? You're going to die anyway, you know? Why do people do it?
True. You
know? Because I don't want it to delete my tax returns.
but you get a big score.
This actually reminds me of a, I think it was like 1998 PC game called Virus. I don't know if anybody's heard of it, but it was advertised, I think, in our famous Duke Nukem issue. And
oh my god,
it's somehow exclusive.
Which one? there were multiple Duke Nukem issues.
I don't know. It read the infrastructure, your file structure, and sort of virtualized, like, if something was a bitmap, it would show up almost like a Doom style 3D maze, or more Wolfenstein like, I guess. And you would have to fight things, and certain files would become like quote unquote corrupted, and you would lose access to them. So you're sort of like fighting back for access to your own computer almost. Which was awesome. I've been really meaning to retry it. I have a feeling you need a specific operating system on there to get it.
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that one up. Well, we can virtualize any operating system. So
yeah, you'll have to get the world's least secure operating system for that.
It is 95? Yeah.
I just stumbled upon that in an early sort of like, wow, how about that? Lose at stefj.net if you so desire. Time for zombie talk. There was all kinds of excitement when Valve took the wraps off the new scavenge mode from Left 4 Dead 2 in downtown San Francisco last night, and our own Dan Stapleton and Eric Belsas were there to shoot first and ask questions later over appetizers. Dan, tell us about the game.
Well, it's kind of a variation. What?
The what? Mode, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just... Right.
It's a variation on Left 4 Dead in that you're not trying to get really from you're not trying to get to safety. You are trying to go out from a central location. In this case, it seemed like a emptied out swimming pool. Is that what that was, Eric?
Right. In the middle of the motel. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're in a motel in an emptied out swimming pool, and there's a generator down there, and so your objective is to go out from this kind of fenced in pool area and go and find cans of gasoline and bring those back to the generator and pour the gas in there before as many as you can before the zombies stop you. Every can of gas you bring back extends your time limit. So either the zombies kill everybody or you run out of time the teams switch and you're the zombies trying to stop the other guys from bringing gas in, and it's, you know, a point-based system. There are three rounds. Whoever wins, or whoever gets the most points wins. And it was a lot of fun. A lot of that I think came from, this is the first time I got to play with some of the new zombie types, the charger, the jockey, and the spitter. Just using them was different enough for to give me a good experience. Eric, what were your impressions of it?
Can you just recap the zombie types real fast for anyone who may not know?
Yeah. The jockey is a little guy who will pounce on a survivor and kind of steer him around. So the really nasty thing about him is if you get somebody who's kind of a straggler and jump on his back, you can move him away from his teammates, making it harder for them to rescue him.
Did you try him out?
Oh yeah, yeah. I really brutalized Norm with him once. I jumped on Norm's back, and the problem, one of the problems with this particular setting that we were playing this game in is it was a very loud area, and so there was not a whole lot of communication between teammates. So I jumped on his back, and I guess Nathan Edwards, also of Maximum PC, was with him, and like a smoker had grabbed him. So Norm was going to go rescue Nathan. I jumped on his back and carried him away, or, you know, guided him away. And, totally ruined his day. That one. It's kind of fun, except like the first couple times I played as the jockey, I figured because like his attack, you know, it says push, you know, click to lunge. So I was thinking he was going to lunge like the hunter, but he lunges a much shorter distance than the hunter. So I like lined up a shot and lunged, and I only got like halfway there. And I lunged again and still didn't make it. And then they shot me in the face. It's a little bit different. The spitter is similar to the smoker in a lot of ways. He he just lobs a glob of goo, basically, that if it hits somebody, it has kind of a boomer-like effect, and then it messes up their vision. But more importantly, it leaves a puddle of goo on the ground for a while that if you walk through it, it hurts you, or at least for the survivors.
Did you notice, Dan, that that acid puddle also lights gas cans on fire?
I did notice that. Yeah, it's very handy, and they're the only zombies that can actually take out, you know, destroy the gas cans, which is a big advantage. But you know, again, since you can't control what zombie you spawn as, it's not really unbalanced. But yeah, the survivors can just kind of keep trying to throw the gas cans closer to the generator. And then fight their way to the gas can again and throw it again. So if the spitter can destroy it, it thwarts that plan.
So for both of you guys, what is your new favorite special infected to play as?
We haven't covered the Charger yet.
Well,
go ahead. The Charger is kind of a mini tank almost. If you're controlling him and his primary attack is a charge. So he does kind of a rhino thing. You can't really steer him when he's charging. So if the survivors dodge you and they get a clear shot at your back, you're screwed. But like when you're charging, he's got this one massive arm that he puts up in front of him that deflects a lot of ammo. But to answer your question, I think the Jockey is my new favorite.
Cool.
For me, it's definitely the Charger because, as we discovered, when you start charging, until you hit a wall, you'll just keep going. And so I think I ended up carrying some guy from IGN, like, halfway across the map and then just pummeled him into the ground until he was kind of a pile of guts.
Yeah, that's really, really cool. It's
satisfying.
Yeah, it's a really cool animation where when you do hit somebody with the Charger, it grabs him and just starts picking him up and throwing him down on the ground, and just brutalizing him like that until somebody gets you off of him. So it is a very satisfying animation.
Yeah, and we actually get bonuses here for virtually pummeling other competing journalists. So I owe you $20. I mean, so scavenge mode, it's kind of like an Easter egg hunt, right? I mean, it's a very frightening, terrifying Easter egg hunt.
And it's not really an Easter egg hunt because all the gas cans are lit up on the map. Like you can see them through walls, so you know exactly where they are. Okay. It's more a matter of just defending your teammates while they're carrying the item. So it's kind of a capture the flag variant almost. Yeah, I can definitely see it being it's kind of a much quicker variation, like a multiplayer game as opposed to the playing an entire versus round. It's over in maybe 5 minutes, 5 to 6 minutes, I'd say.
Depending on how well you do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, each round starts out with like a minute and a half on the timer, and you can add like 30 seconds at a time with a gas can. Competent zombies will end that within a couple minutes.
Yeah.
Competent zombies.
Yes.
I see them, interviewing with their ties, all bloody. And
Competent Zombies is actually the name of my rock band.
Ladies and gentlemen, Competent Zombies. Was it nice to cool to attend your first event, Eric?
Yeah, I had a real good time. I think Valve has that giant marketing budget, and they must have spent some of it on food because some of the food was pretty good, which was nice while other people were playing and you could watch. But
they only had a certain number of computers set up, so you could just stand behind. They'd bring around some hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, and it was a lot of fun. One thing that we didn't really mention yet is that wasn't on the PC, but it was over on the Xboxes, the chainsaw, and they've never shown that in America before. And that was real interesting because it just carves up everything in its path, but it runs out of gas really quick. And from what I understand, you can use the gas cans also to fill up the chainsaw if you want. So it added just, I guess, another level to that.
You have to choose between scoring a point and refilling
and possibly surviving. Yeah.
Although, without getting the points, you went out of time anyway. So
yeah. I really enjoyed Scavenge. You know, it's something fresh. It really piqued my interest in the game again. So
would you really carry a chainsaw in the event of a zombie apocalypse, though?
It depends on how the zombie virus is transmitted. If it's bloodborne, no.
It just seems unwieldy and, you know.
Assuming I don't have a firearm, then, you know, a chainsaw seems like a pretty effective means of decapitating.
I just see myself running, and then you slip, and then you fall backwards, and you're like, no!
I mean...
Well, it's the same thing with any bladed weapon, right?
I know, but it always happens to somebody in the movie, you know?
The zombie survival guide, if you consult it, it says machete, basically, a very sharp machete.
Yeah.
And as long as you have some fitness and you train constantly, which is one of the rules,
yeah,
you're going to be fit enough to just keep hacking away heads. And you'll be fine. Not running out of gas.
Yeah, I feel like you'd do better with like a sock filled with sand, a wet one, you know? Just swinging it around in all directions.
I mean, Logan, the point is to kill them, not just to like be mean to them.
Well, I know. I mean, but you're trying to clear a path, you know? And I'm just saying, you've got this huge thing. And all right, maybe I'm alone here on this issue.
Well, Logan, just remember, you know, in order to really stop a zombie, you got to go for the decapitation. And a wet sock full of sand is not going to decapitate anybody.
I'll concede that the wet sock is really enough to be effective.
But speaking of decapitation, actually, one of the things that really stood out to me playing it now, as opposed to when they first announced it, when we did a reveal on it, was they really really amped up the zombie decapitation and dismemberment. Just like pretty much any time you shoot a zombie now, something comes off of them. Whether it's just a chunk of flesh from the arms or legs or torso, or like an entire limb, it really does, you know, give you more of a feeling of interacting with the environment. I mean, that's one thing about games that always, you know, kind of bugs me a little bit, where I've got like all this firepower and I shoot something and it does not have the effect that you think it should have. It doesn't have the subtle impact, or not so subtle in the case of explosives, it didn't leave the mark behind that I hoped it would. And this is actually, I mean, it still doesn't, you know, solve the issue where if you throw a Molotov cocktail at something flammable and you think it should burn and it doesn't, but this is like, you know, the thing that you're shooting the most, actually reacting realistically, or, you know, in an exaggerated way to being shot, which for me is a big reward for my actions in a game.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So the other thing that was leaked last night apparently was this realism mode that Valve sort of forgot to take out of the game. Nobody got to play it, but it was sort of visible or alluded to, I guess.
Yeah, I missed that.
Yeah.
It was in like, if you went into the settings before the game started, there was like a little checkbox for realism mode. And of course they wouldn't let us play it. So everything now is kind of speculation, I think, but.
So let's speculate then. I mean, Norm and I have been talking this past week, like we just feel like we have way too much ammo. We can just deal with any threat in the game. You know, is it going to be headshots only? Is it going to be, just maybe, more damage?
Yeah. Maybe not unlimited pistol ammo.
That's not seem very realistic.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, I mean, the entire premise is pretty unrealistic. So I don't know how they would make it much more. I admit, maybe like if one zombie grabs you, it's going to hurt more. I don't know.
Well, there was a mod. I'm trying to remember exactly what was in it, but several months ago, an original Left 4 Dead mod that made the game more realistic, I think, by only requiring, like, it was headshots only. You had a laser sight in your pistol and no crosshair. I think your flashlight had a battery mechanic attached to it.
Aiming when you're amped up is a lot harder than it looks. So, you know, there could be something like that. It wouldn't seem to me very much fun, you know, to not be able to aim right, but it would be realistic.
I don't know. Either way, it's reassuring for, I don't want to say players like myself that play the game a lot and just want, you know, a more challenging.
Or maybe it's just like a realism mode is like all the other characters annoy you. You don't get along with them. You wish they hadn't survived.
You know, that's one thing that would definitely be in there is friendly fire, or like like dramatically.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, I look forward to playing a scavenge myself. I'm very upset that I couldn't be there. When do we expect Left 4 Dead 2 out again?
November 17th.
November 17th. So close, you can almost taste the zombie jerky.
The Escapist, which you can find at escapistmagazine.com, is one of my favorite online video game magazines. This month, it handed over the editorial reins to Flynn DeMarco, who's the editor-in-chief over at gaygamer.net. And they pretty much devoted the whole entire issue to gay and transgender issues in video games, as well as gay perspectives on video games. And there's a particularly interesting article by a guy named Robert Yang, who did a mod for Half-Life 2, Episode 2, called Handle with Care, that puts the player in a session with a marriage therapist and his spouse. This is, as far as I know, the first Half-Life 2, Episode 2 mod to take place in Fresno, California. But he says something in the article that I thought was extraordinary. He says he got a lot of unpleasant feedback from players who may have found the mod interesting, but objected to the gay content, which amounts to all of a single pronoun in the game. So, if the game doesn't hinge on either character being gay, why not just make the game about straight people? You know, it'll appeal to more people, right? I'm sorry?
Well, I mean, we're in a state that, I mean, Prop 8, you know, I think... It's kind of, a lot of gamers still have kind of ignorant views about, you know, homosexuality. You know, you go into any online game, you know, like those guys did that test where they went into some online game with like, and their name was something that alluded to them being gay. And, you know, they were just constantly flamed, you know. So a lot of gamers still out there are immature about this and really, you know, so I don't know.
Well, but that enforce the argument that why not just make the game about straight people? Because
because that's giving into it. I mean, gamers should. Okay. I mean, it's not all gamers, but gamers should come around. You know, yeah. I mean, like our state.
Well, I mean, a lot of them are 14-year-olds.
What the mod developer said in the article was. His reply was, because games about gay people are unpopular and unprofitable, and thus no one else will make them. I thought that was awesome. I love that. I mean, I don't think games need to be culturally relevant, but there's a sign right there that they are, because people are making them because they think they need to be made, you know. And it's like the lose-lose guy at the beginning. You know, we were talking about him earlier. Why would somebody make a game like that? You know, because he's a developer who's exploring questions and trying to float answers at the same time.
Yeah,
through video
games. How many AAA games have you seen with a gay character in it? I mean, none.
Grand Theft Auto 4.
Yeah, but even that was like kind of a joke. I mean, Gay Tony, you know, like.
Gay Tony is not a very typical gay man in Grand Theft Auto 4.
He's a caricature.
Yeah, but if you looked at commercials for it, yeah, it was complete, you know, caricature. It wasn't like an actual take on, you know, sexuality. It was just kind of a joke, you know, in a way.
We've got thanks. You got to imagine, like any media or any entertainment producer, it's difficult to know how to introduce this, you know, whether or not you're either just trying to portray how the world is or trying to make a point. I mean, a lot of like sitcoms might have like a homosexual character that is just kind of there to serve that purpose, to serve that plot point or something. And, you know, frankly, if games took that approach, that wouldn't be the right approach, I think, just having token characters, so to speak.
Well, I think part of it is just that a character's sexuality does not tend to come up that much in a game setting. I mean, if Gordon Freeman were gay, what difference would that make to the plot? I mean, he could be gay and it would never come up. I mean, how a straight person shoots an alien and how a gay person shoots an alien look remarkably similar. So I don't see it as a big issue there.
Look how many games exploit, you know, females. I mean, look at almost every woman in a video game. I mean, she has like, you know, barely any clothes on and, you know, that kind of stuff. And you don't see any of that explored, you know, like there's kind of this unspoken thing where they don't do that with, you know, gay characters, or they don't even talk about it. I mean,
so
I think it's kind of
like you would like to see naked men in games.
I'm just saying, if you're going to have like a sex scene in a game, why can't a game have a gay sex scene?
Funny you should mention that. I mean, Mass Effect has it.
Why not?
Age Origins has one. Actually, The Sims 3, for example, and The Sims 2, and I think going back to The Sims 1 has allowed same-sex relationship.
Yeah.
If you play as a male character in Mass Effect, could you engage in a relationship with the male first captain?
Caden?
Kaden, yeah, was that the the character that you could engage in? Because I played as a female character, and I knew you could do a female relationship with the alien or with what's her name, Amy or
right.
Ashley. But I'm not sure if there was a man like I think male homosexuality. Was there?
I don't know,
but there is a male homosexual relationship in or possibility in Dragon Age Origins.
Oh, cool. Okay, that's very cool.
Fable on the Xbox allows marriages, which, you know, that was a big deal or a big statement when it came out, I guess.
Yeah. I was just very struck by this guy's defense of why he does what he does, even when there's a popular and profitable alternative. You know, he says, I did it because I felt it needed to be made. And then somebody does something and suddenly something that was unthinkable is now sort of commonplace and ordinary. And that's typical of learning and experience is you do something, you try it. It seems ridiculous at first, but, you do it because maybe you'll have insights. Maybe you won't. But like lose guy, you know?
I think this guy, you know, he's been probably, you know, just attacked and flamed by like a vocal minority of people on the internet that, I mean, that's what they do. They're just a bunch of, you know, homophobic 14-year-olds out there that it's like, OMG, that's totally gay.
Don't get me wrong. He wasn't like really upset about it. He was very sanguine.
Right. I mean, somebody had asked him that question.
Oh yeah,
but
sure.
I think it's only an issue because a small group of people, you know, just go after that. I don't think it's that big an issue, honestly.
Yeah.
Well, in either situation, I think it's important to recognize. I mean, games have a really interesting situation where the player's identity. I mean, the player attaches their identity to characters depending on what the game is, and that can, you know, present challenges certainly for developers and how they frame. Gay characters, but also opportunities, I think, in how they structure them and tell their own stories. And, you know, hopefully, I mean, ideally, I'd like to see a situation where I can feel attached and not feel like my identity is threatened because I happen to be playing a gay character or something. That's maybe how some people feel. I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. I doubt that you are going to see a game with a strong narrative around a character that the player is playing as. You know, main character like Gordon Freeman that explicitly says this character is gay because in doing so you would, you know, alienate not because people are homophobic, but you would damage the ability of that
to identify,
of straight people to identify with that character. Yeah. And straight people are the overwhelming majority. You know, it'd be fine to make a game like that, you know, that appeals to people that A, don't care, or B, are homosexual themselves and can identify with that, but you would risk alienating a lot of your population or customer base.
Well, you can find Yank's essay as well as a link to download the mod at escapistmagazine.com, the mods for Half-Life 2 Episode 2. Thanks to The Escapist and Flynn DeMarco for a terrific issue. It's great. You see, you know, articles of, you know, about gay issues here and there from time to time, but, you know, they devoted the whole issue to it, which really kind of makes it stand out, reminds people that is a huge audience out there.
He's a really nice guy too. Yeah, I've met him, met him a couple times.
Our friends over at Maximum PC sat down with Randy Pitchford recently for an exceptionally candid interview that you can find at MaximumPC.com.
Randy is the CEO of Gearbox.
Yes. And yeah, I thought he was pretty candid about a lot of things. He really spoke his mind. For example, he kind of threw this out there. He told Maximum PC it would be much better if Steam was its own business. There's so much conflict of interest that it's horrid. It's actually really, really dangerous for the rest of the industry to allow Valve to win. I love Valve games and I do business with the company, but I'm just saying Steam isn't the answer. Steam helps us as customers, but it's also a money grab, and Valve is exploiting a lot of people in a way that's not totally fair. Valve is taking a larger share than it should for the service it's providing. It's exploiting a lot of small guys. For us big guys, we're going to sell the units and it'll be fine.
It is, I mean, when you put it like that, I mean, there's a lot of things hidden in there, like how much is Valve taking? We don't know that. We don't have access to that information. But when you think about it in the way that he's framing it, I mean, I'm trying to think of another industry, but I mean, Valve is vertically integrated in that way where they own the means of distribution and they are content creators. But they also have the means to take money from their competition, basically, right? I mean, they're earning money off their competitors' products. And I can't help but think, I wish I had a good analog for that in another industry, that would be a problem, or that would be a concern to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I guess part of it would be like, say Apple became a music producer as well as distributor.
Yes, yeah.
That would be a very close analog. But I mean, the real conflict of interest here is that Valve is in a position to promote their own products over other people's products on their service, making them, giving them an unfair advantage on the playing field there. Which, yeah. I mean, all things considered, it's not that big of a disadvantage. I mean, sure, like the space on like the front page of the store is always going to go to a Valve game over everything else. However, Valve also stands to make money from every sale of every game, for zero investment on their part. So, yeah. I mean, they obviously are incentivized to move more copies of their own product. But they're incentivized to move copies of every product. Mm-hmm. Randy is absolutely right here, though, that it is a conflict of interest, and it would be more ideal if Valve were to spin off Steam, or if there were to be a competitor to Steam that is not owned by a game publisher and designer. I guess Director to Drive is like one of the only ones I can think of that is more or less independent like that. Because I mean, Impulse is owned by Stardock.
Yeah. I mean, Steam Valve has done such a great job and has been mostly benevolent. I mean, almost completely benevolent so far. So I see his point. It's hard for me to hang on to an example of like how this could be damaging 5 years from now, 10 years from now.
Well, if 5 or 10 years from now, digital distribution does overtake brick and mortar stores as the primary place where people get games, then it could be a significant issue. And if Steam were to become the number one place, like had 90% of the market share of PC game downloads, then they would be in a position to jack up the take that they get from every game sold. If they had a monopoly on it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Then that would be a problem. However, I don't think that's going to be a problem because it's not super duper hard to create a competing service. Lots of people are doing it. Direct to Drive these days is doing a really good job with these sales they've got of catching people's eye with $5 for BioShock.
That's amazing.
$5 for Company of Heroes. Yes, please. You know, it's Steam, has their own sales, but they're not the only game in town.
And Impulse has been matching them feature for feature in a lot of ways, with like the Impulse DRM stuff and all that.
Isn't there a PC Gamer web store?
There is.
How do you guys do that one?
We kind of outsource it to a company that handles it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's almost ironic to me as well, like, thinking if Microsoft were more invested right now in PC digital distribution, because they've closed all these studios that were, Ensemble and whatnot, they almost wouldn't have the same conflict of interest because they're not a PC content maker anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right. They do not generate any PC content these days. So, but they're also not selling games right now. They're selling Fallout DLC. That's it.
Right.
But yeah, if they were to enter the market, then yes, they would be essentially a neutral party in that. Although they are a game publisher and developer, although just not on this platform.
God help us all.
I mean, Valve did it though. Valve came up with the service, or just pioneered it, and said, "We're going to go ahead. We're going to do this. This is what we would want." And it's been actually really good for the industry. And I can see what Randy's saying. He's saying it's prima facie. I don't want my competitor selling my goods. But the industry is so small in reality that it's probably not as big as a deal as it seems, on the outside. Like it's such a tight industry, as you guys know full well, that like everybody sort of has to like rely on everybody else. So,
well, to some extent,
it's a better option than GameStop. I mean, look at the PC section there.
Right, but although a lot of the majority of PC games are still sold out of stores like GameStop and like Walmart and Target and a bunch of other brick and mortar stores, The digital distribution is still a small percentage.
And, you know, a really monolithic entity at the center of a growing, you know, industry is not a terribly, you know, it's not a terrible thing. That's why we have Windows. And that's why an entire gaming platform coalesced around this operating system. You know, it became a monster. It became unwieldy, but still. He also talked about the state of PC gaming in general. He said, quote, "The longer the generation goes with the consoles, the more extreme side of the PC will have an advantage from a technology perspective. The other thing is that a PC is a very flexible platform. We can build PCs of a lot of different types. Another angle to it is that it's a very accessible platform. It invites a lot of different development activities. However, the biggest games in the world are very costly to produce." Makes a lot of great points there. I think it's maybe one of the first times I've heard somebody say, call the PC call it out as being an accessible platform, but it is. You know, number one, because almost everyone's got a PC anyway, you know?
Right. They don't necessarily have a gaming PC, but they have a PC.
Yeah, but even the slowest PC in the world, if you've got a browser, you've still got you've got a gaming PC, you know?
I think that's...
I wouldn't say the slowest PC in the world.
I think even a hand crank could run, you know.
Flash Tetris. Actually does... Flash actually can suck up CPU cycles. So, I mean, I've seen some old computers that cannot handle it. So let's not go out on a limb and say any PC, but any PC made in the last 5, 6, 7 years.
I do tend to think that in terms of accessibility, that's something graphics card makers and I guess OEMs have kind of pigeonholed themselves into being, you know, this is the most hardcore graphics card. It's going to play all your games at FPS and it's going to do this and that. But in reality, a lot of people that buy PCs or are interested in buying a gaming PC or graphics card, they just want to justify it. They say, well, you know, I'm going to need Microsoft Word anyway. I'm going to be doing these applications and browsing the web. Is there a system that, you know, does these things together and also can play games? Like, they're not interested necessarily in the most extreme hardcore, you know, game breaking hard piece of hardware, but they want a reason that's economical to, you know, to pursue PC gaming, I think.
I don't know about you guys, but I was weaned on adventure games way back in the old text adventure days through the glory years of LucasArts, and I still love them today, despite how, you know, I admit how formulaic the genre has become. A couple of years ago, we gave a shout out, though, to a game called Gray Matter, which is an adventure game by Jane Jensen, the woman who worked on many of the early Sierra games and then brought us the incredible Gabriel Knight series. Gray Matter was supposed to come out in 2007, but that didn't happen in this universe. Didn't come out in 2008 either. And it won't be coming out this year. But the German publisher DTP Entertainment tossed out a press release announcing the completion of the English voice work in anticipation of a March 2010 release. Anybody else excited? Is that 3-year delay a good sign or a bad sign?
I think it's fine. I mean, I love female protagonists in adventure-like games. So that's exciting, sort of a return to that mini genre for me. I mean, how would you describe it in terms of like what... I mean, is it point and click? Is it puzzle?
Okay, I hate to say it because it sounds like a slam and it's not, but it's a classic point and click. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah.
And she's been very sort of, even though she's been doing a blog and all that, she's been very secretive about it, not sharing all that much information. And it looks like a classic point and click, which is a little, you know.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Not really, but, I mean, Dan, you've been a critic of the formulaic, you know, nature of a lot of adventure games. Do you think it can really, somebody who's been, you know, a pillar can really make the genre feel fresh again?
I honestly know nothing at all about this game, so it's really hard for me to say. I mean, I would say that the controls are the least of the problems that I've had in the past with adventure games. Mm-hmm. I think that the mechanics could certainly use a refresh. Just, you know, the type of things you do and interface has always been a problem with me. I do like the new Monkey Island stuff a lot.
Uh-huh.
I wish that the interface was a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But I like the, you know, I like the way the story is delivered through it. and I like the way they handle humor a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I don't hate the genre. You know, it's just I'd say the majority of my experience with adventure games has just been, I just kind of get bored with it because there's so much, trying to combine or trying to pixel hunt or combine items that don't intuitively go together, or, you know, it's just design things like that. They are easily fixed, but people just don't, designers just don't seem to want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems kind of a return to the classic, classic adventure games. And I mean, she's kind of a pioneer of it. Well, not a pioneer, but.
Oh, I throw my weight behind Pioneer.
I mean, when was it? 93? It was after Secret of Monkey Island, wasn't it? Gabriel Knight?
Yes. Sure.
Yeah. So, and that was kind of a fresh take on it. Nobody had done the kind of the noir adventure game yet. And I mean,
Gabriel Knight 3 was an epic. It really was. Epic adventure game.
I don't think the genre is any more formulaic than, you know, your run of the mill FPS, to be honest.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, right.
Fair criticism.
Yeah, that's a really terrific point. Oh, that makes me feel a lot better because I'm definitely looking forward to this, even as little as I know about it.
No, there's tons of people that don't play, you know, first person shooters, and that, I mean, there are a ton of people that love adventure games. I think the Telltale games have sold really well, I think. So I think there's still a market out there. It's obviously not the dominant genre it was, but I mean, I think it'll sell.
If we're talking about the genre as a whole, I had the chance to chat with Ron Gilbert at PAX about Deathbank, and you know, which is his new adventure/action-adventure game. And sort of what he's doing, I mean, if you think about the walking that you do in adventure games, basically. So imagine all that walking, but you're mashing monsters in the ground and getting gold like Diablo while you're walking, while you're exploring this world. That's kind of his solution to it, I guess. That's his, you know, he sees there's a lot of commonality between the two genres in that they both are interested in items and item accumulation. Mm-hmm. So that's a way for him to merge those mechanics, I guess.
What attracts me the most are like characters and personalities that you get so much more of than in other genres. It's not necessarily what I go to gaming for usually. But back then it was, you know, and I would love to come back.
The narrative is kind of the gameplay, so it allows, you know, for a lot more than, say, a different genre.
You know, oddly, I do really like when adventure game elements are blended into other genres. And like StarCraft II, for example, is heavily implementing some adventure genre stuff into their games. Pretty much everything that happens between missions is an adventure game, like a straight up point and click adventure game.
So it's not that I'm expecting or that Gray Matter needs to be some revolutionary thing or a big comeback for a great, you know, wonderful craftswoman.
You're just demanding it.
I'm just looking forward to a really good game with a meaty story, you know, great characters. So we'll see. Let's take some listener questions.
Hi, this is Matt from Ontario, Canada, and I was just wondering what you guys thought about the recent trend of PC games coming out later than their console counterparts, and the most recent being Modern Warfare 2. And, you know, I don't really condone piracy, but often you see the finished game show up on torrent sites a lot sooner than they hit retail shelves. And this happened with the new Batman game. So doesn't this really indicate that the game is already finished and that they're really just delaying it for financial or other reasons? Love to hear what you think, and I love the podcast.
This guy's got a goddamn good point.
Well, not sort of. First and foremost,
that's a great question. Number one,
the Modern Warfare 2 delay has yet to be confirmed. It's looking likely,
to be denied. Isn't that the case?
That is also the case. Yes, it is yet to be confirmed.
Let's assume it will be.
Okay,
for the sake of this question.
Okay, so the game showing up earlier than it's released has nothing to do with when it's finished, or, you know, it being finished in advance and being held back for financial reasons. Every game or lots of games show up before they hit shelves. And that's because the primary source of these leaks is the duplication factories. So when the game is sent off to be duplicated and you know, pressed onto disks and packaged in boxes and then sent off to stores. There's somebody in these duplication factories that swipes a disk and distributes it. That's at least what I've always been told by various developers where the least secure part of the chain is. Mm-hmm. And that's why you see games hitting the torrent sites before they hit the shelves. There's actually, you know, a significant delay, just like with our magazine. There's a delay. It takes time to get copies of a game across the country to all these different stores. And then there's generally a shelf date, when the stores are supposed to start selling it. And a lot of times you see stores where some, you know, dumb employee opens a box that he shouldn't have and starts selling the game. And that's the exact same thing. So it's not necessarily, done for reasons other than the game is not yet ready on PC. And it's very conceivable that, for example, with Modern Warfare 2, I would bet money that the problem that arose there is that they had some kind of issue arise with the console version, which is obviously their priority because they're going to sell a bajillion copies on the console. So they probably had some kind of last minute issue arise with that. They had to pull people from the PC version to work on the console version to finish it on time. The PC version is less of a priority, so it gets pushed back in the schedule.
You really think that's maybe the case?
I think that sounds very plausible to me.
I wish that was the case. Like, I hope that's the case.
I don't see any reason why they would announce a release date and then push it back for financial reasons. If it's financial reasons and that's the plan all along, they would not have announced it simultaneously.
That doesn't make sense.
Is 2 weeks enough time to really finish the game, though? I mean, 2 weeks is nothing.
Depends on what the problem is. Sometimes
when you move bodies, yeah, you can you can double. You know, I never even thought of that. I think Dan's explanation is extremely plausible.
Yeah, two weeks. I mean, it depends on what the problem is. If they were originally intending to finish it by a certain date, and something just did not quite get done up to their standards, 2 weeks. It could be 2 days. It could be less than that. So it just depends on, you know, what they thought it was going to take. Meanwhile, Alpha Protocol was originally supposed to come out like next month and got pushed to spring 2010 for probably a combination of both quality and financial reasons. So it's like sometimes a game comes, you know, it comes up to their production deadline and they realize this is not going to get done in time. And there's a lot more work to be done. So we need a big date pushback. And sometimes it's smaller. I mean, this also happened with Borderlands. That's exactly what happened. There was a problem with the PC version and they needed a few more days to fix it. Hmm.
So you don't think they're just pushing the PC version away from the console dates? So players who own multiple platforms will just buy it on the console?
I don't think that's why.
I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but it kind of does if they want to like pad the numbers.
Well, and again, if they wanted to do that, they would not have announced a simultaneous release date to begin with.
And they upped the price of the PC one, too.
On Modern Warfare, yes.
That's very rare. I mean, that's the only
it's the only time it's ever happened.
Yeah.
In the last 12 years.
It just has seemed like there's been at least, I don't know, 4 games that have just done this in the last, like, because last year it happened with Mirror's Edge, Assassin's Creed, like,
Assassin's Creed was never announced as a simultaneous release date.
Okay, but even so, it's like these games aren't coming out at the same time for PC. We have to wait all this time. And then this year it was like, okay, these games are going to take the same day. They're going to come out the same day. And so, you know, everybody's looking forward to that. And now it seems like everything's Borderlands is 2 weeks, you know, Modern Warfare is 2 weeks later.
Yeah, my take on it is that a lot of times, like with Resident Evil 5, we got something better that came out on the consoles.
Okay, good point.
That was totally worth the wait, but that's a company that's really committed, right?
Also with Mass Effect, they redid the interface. They did a lot of things.
Yeah.
And boy, did they a bang up job. I'll wait for that. Another point is that, and this isn't much consolation to a lot of people, but if you're not part of the first wave of buyers, you can cut your gaming, you know, budget by 2/3. By just waiting for games to come down in price a little bit or go on sale or something like that, like a month or two down the line. That's what I did before I worked here. You know, I never bought things right when they came out just because they were too expensive. So I never worried about when things came out anyway, you know, because I always just figured just wait, you know.
Yeah. I mean, if you're routinely behind, like you'll have a big backlog anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of what I do with TV shows. You know, I watch them on Hulu for the most part. And so I'm not all that concerned with when something new comes out. Although obviously when you're passionate about something like anybody who would be listening to this podcast is about games, it's very difficult to wait.
It's horrible to wait. Yeah. I mean,
you want it right awful. Goddamn now.
I was going
to
echo what you said earlier, Andy, that, I mean, it's natural to want to be a part of that conversation. You know,
exactly.
If you have friends that do play games on console a lot, you want to be engaged, you want to have water cooler moments, but you know, again, you prefer that over just the raw quality of the port and the polish on it. I don't know. I mean, and when we mentioned, let's see, Mass Effect, the original Mass Effect and Mirror's Edge, if I recall correctly, those delays were months.
Yeah, I mean, that was
That was a long, long time. And Assassin's Creed was like 6 months later, something like that. And,
it's almost harder though, because this is a good time to talk about the Modern Warfare 2 trailer that just came out. Because like, all of a sudden they reveal that like, stuff's going down in Washington. That's going to be cool.
Yeah.
And that's going to be hard to wait 2 weeks without looking out spoilers and stuff.
And something's going to get spoiled. I mean, 2 weeks is like, we're not going to be able to use the internet for 2 weeks. I mean, come on.
Well, I mean, unless you were going to play through the entire game in one sitting.
Hell yeah. It's probably only like a 4 or 5 hour game.
Yeah.
Right. Probably. But I mean, for most games, you know, unless you're going to just get it and play the hell out of it and finish it, get through all the story stuff right away, that's going to happen anyway. And most games, for most people, that's not really viable. I mean, it's obviously a concern, but I don't think that avoiding Modern Warfare 2 spoilers is going to be that hard.
I know.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, it generally isn't. People are pretty respectful.
It's a matter of will though, because I want to play it.
Play it, but you don't necessarily want to go read every spoilery review.
I can't help myself. I will.
You know, I think another reason is that it could be that a lot of developers believe that, well, once it comes out in the PC, the pirated versions just spread everywhere. And which is kind of tragic because I feel like the people who do download games, pirated games, I mean, it's a nightmare. You know, you see on forums every day, like, how difficult it is. And, oh, use this patch. And, oh, we just versioned up to this other patch to fix this issue. And the Batman thing was hilarious. The Batman ISO that went out.
Yeah,
online had all these built-in problems to sort of foil anybody who wasn't using the right executable. And it's a nightmare to do. So I don't think people who would put up with that kind of thing, I'm not sure that they're really the people who were going to buy it anyway, ever.
Right.
Because they have a tolerance that's just unbelievable to inconvenience and all the things that make games fun, which is not having problems.
Right.
So it's too bad that people are, you know, developers are skittish about that, but I understand it.
But you know, again, I don't think that is the case with this set of
it's
delays.
Possible. Yeah.
And if they were worried about that, they would never have announced a simultaneous release date.
That's true. And I really do think yours is the best, most plausible answer.
I want to.
So, Andy, can I get a recording of that and we can just play it back every time I ever say anything?
Yes. Absolutely.
God, no. What have I done? Let's get to the Wayback Machine, everybody. Okay, let's take another reader question.
Hey, Beast Gamer. This is Justin from San Jose. Love the podcast. I'm wondering, when you do your playlist, what difficulty level you play your games on a personal standpoint. Tend to play my games a little on the extreme side, but the highest difficulty. I'm wondering how that colors your perspective on the games you play. Secondly, what got me into PC gaming in the beginning was Aces of the Pacific, Aces over Europe. But Flight Sim seem to be out of style now on PC games. I never hear anyone talk about that on the podcast. Are there any Flight Sim games that you can recommend?
Well, I guess to answer the last part first, none of us are really Flight Sim players. I'm not anyway.
I was a long time ago. Not anymore.
I still enjoy the occasional flight sim, and something I picked up on. It's
if you're really hardcore, it's like absurdly difficult to really get going, but X-Plane is open source and it's incredible. It's incredibly detailed, but you have to really be able to work your way in there.
But they've got a great community behind it, you know?
They really do, yeah.
The thing about Flight Sims is that it's not that they've gone out of style. It's just, I think people are already pretty well served. The games are out there. The Sims are out there. It's not like a new story has to come out every year. And you've got giant communities huddled around IL-2 Sturmovik and Flight Simulator 10 and X-Plane. I could think of a few more, but I'll have to kind of rattle my brain. But yeah, there are giant online communities around there, and they swap, you know, mods and all that. So I would, but Flight Simulator 10 to me is just dazzling. That's the last Flight Sim I've played.
Yeah, so that's also the last Flight Sim they're going to make, or Microsoft's going to make anyway.
Oh, yeah.
There was a helicopter sim not too long ago called Black Shark, which I believe reviewed fairly well. Unfortunately, my review search function is broken right now, but
it's in.
Yeah, but I believe it reviewed fairly well. I think it's Russian made, but that one would be worth checking out. I believe the reviewer liked that a lot.
So by the way, X-Plane is at x-plane.com. Ta-da, there you go.
Yeah, so yeah. The first part of the question was about difficulty levels. I always play through on normal first.
Yes,
every time. Yeah. I mean, it's the default setting. It's what the game is, you know, quote unquote intended to be played as, you know, the way it's intended to be played. And if that doesn't suit you, then they have other options, but it's the way they intend and expect everybody to play it the first time through. And you know, that's the way we review it. If a game is not challenging enough or way too hard, then yeah, we'll fiddle with the difficulty, but.
I always play on normal. I cannot remember the last time I played on hard, just because when I get really frustrated, which I do easily, I'm not having fun anymore. And right. I want to get better. I want to, you know, that's why I would love to play on easy all the time, but I do want to, you know, get better and know that, you know, there's some a good relationship between my reflexes and what's happening on the screen. But yeah, if I'm not having fun, it's just not enjoyable anymore. So,
right. Well, I guess the most recent time I've played through on hard is I'm actually in the middle of a playthrough of Batman Arkham Asylum on hard.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of a playthrough of Crisis, the original Crisis on Delta. That game was absurd.
Oh, jeez.
It gets on a bit Delta. Hard, yeah. I'm about halfway through on Delta 2.
They blink and you're dead, you know?
Yeah, you do not take much damage.
I definitely like to crank it up for games that, you know, like Quake 3 or Unreal Tournament with bots, I guess, if I'm playing solo, just to sort of accelerate the pace of a game that's already very frenetic and fast-paced. I tend to turn it down if I'm playing a fighting game because I'm pretty awful at them, and I like to feel good about it.
Oh, my God. I had to play through Street Fighter 4, like, medium was like too hard for me.
It's like, rough. Like, yeah. I got to the fourth guy and I'm like just getting crushed, and I don't know.
What do you guys think about there? It was a fad for a while, but I don't see it as much anymore. About games that adjust their difficulty levels dynamically.
Yes, it is a good thing.
Does that ever work?
It does. Have you played Resident Evil 4? Have you noticed like how dramatically that game adjusts? Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess not dramatically, but subtly and well. That game adjusts difficulty level. And it's, if you go through certain articles and postmortems, that's really one of the reasons people cite why it's so enjoyable, why it doesn't frustrate you too much, but it still challenges you, and why the set pieces succeed, I think.
Doesn't Left 4 Dead do that in some ways?
I guess. I mean, that's the director.
The AI director.
No, because you can still play it on, what's the hardest, like Extreme? Or it isn't Hardcore.
Right, but... And if you jack up the difficulty yourself, I know it, you know, it has no mercy, but I think on the regular, and no pun intended on no mercy, but I think just the regular difficulty, I think it does, like if you're doing well, I think it does throw more zombies at you, doesn't it? If you're just burning through the level really quickly.
Sure. Well, of course, and the same goes if you're getting overwhelmed, it's going to give you a break or two. I mean, they've said that publicly, but
that's exactly the same thing, and that's dynamically adjusting the difficulty based on your performance.
But I don't think it's as extreme as changing the difficulty level itself, of course.
Well, I mean, what is the difficulty level? It's how many enemies are thrown at you. It's their durability, how much ammo you get. These are the things that make you, that make a game difficult or easy.
You know who really went, above and beyond with that whole idea was, Sin's.
Oh, it was Sin, the,
what was it? Yeah, Sin.
Oh, that's right. The episode.
Sin episode. That was it. Because if you couldn't hit guys enough, like instead of having helmets, pretty soon they'd appear without helmets.
Right. Or if you were scoring a lot of headshots, they would
do the remake.
Oh, no, that was it. Yeah. If you were scoring too many headshots, they'd appear with helmets and stuff like that. It happened like in such a realistic way. They did great work on that.
Yeah. But then, you know, it was actually Sin episode.
Poor episode.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, man.
That company went out of business.
Yeah, that's right. That's fun though.
Or maybe they just switched to making casual games.
They just stopped, yeah. Pragmatically, like playing a game on hard is what I can no longer do it now because when I sit down to play a game, it's like such precious time, it seems like these days. You know what I mean? Maybe 2 years ago I would call out someone saying this exact same thing, like, oh, you're such a noob. But truly it has become that way. So I can't just play a game and not have fun.
I personally think that that playing through a game on easy kind of defeats the point.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, there's definitely some fun to be had doing it. I like every so often I'll enjoy turning on a god mode code and just kicking the crap out of everything.
What about if you're bad at that genre? Like I suck at real time strategy. I usually have to play on easy. I just can't get by on medium.
Yeah. Well, I mean, taking all the challenge out of it is it defeats the purpose of a game. You know, it's not even really a game anymore. If there's no
real-time strategies,
I'd fundamentally disagree, Dan. Like,
will fight you.
I mean, so you're saying if there's no challenge, you're not enjoying yourself?
Wait, is that Andy? I would like you to replay the Logan clip.
Oh God! Oh, I didn't.
destroy
it. Can't do it yet.
There was some nice discussion when Red Faction Guerrilla came out on console of these certain journalists who are like, play the game on casual. You'll enjoy the game a lot more if you play on casual. You're busting through structures and destroying things, and you have more ammo, and you're just enjoying the physics of the game, and that's, you know, a more fun thing than being challenged and losing missions.
Well, I mean, that's an issue. Perhaps the default mode was too hard, and that is a problem. But generally, there are always exceptions to every broad statement that I make.
He did just say though that the idea of playing that way was to enjoy the physics, not necessarily to be harder. Right,
or it's not necessarily to enjoy the game. It's to enjoy the physics. The physics are not a game. The physics are.
No, I mean, I think they're saying like enjoy it like this instead of like that.
Yeah, experience. I mean, the experience, I guess. It doesn't have
to be hard to be fun.
No, it doesn't have to be hard to be fun. But I'm not saying it should be hard. I'm saying that it should have some challenge. There should be some obstacle to overcome, and that to me is the essence of playing a game. Without obstacles to overcome, you're walking from point A to point B, and no matter how many explosions there are in between, if there's no hurdles are left over, then there is no sense of accomplishment.
You could still die on easy. What's to stop you from saying then, like, why not? You have to play on hard or like whatever is extreme.
I think what the developers were suggesting to Evan is almost like you invert what we expect from a game like that. In that, you know, a shooter we usually associate with it's really, really hard and then you get some story. Whereas they're saying, well, get it, enjoy the story and the physics and the adventure of it, and then we add a little, you know, shooting challenge.
Right, but that's
easy mode be to them, I think, maybe, right?
But I mean, to me, that's when you're, and I do that all the time with games. When I especially ones that they're moddable, I will go in and I will tweak things and I will play with them. I will use them as a toy. But it's not, this is, you know, obviously a semantic argument. But to me, that's not really playing the game. That's using it as a toy to amuse myself. It's not playing the game that has been set up for me, and rules for me to go through and play through. And obviously, you know, on easy mode, there is still some challenge, but I think that by lowering the challenge to a certain degree, you are depriving yourself of the hurdles to cross. And obviously some people are going to disagree with me, and obviously some people are going to enjoy that more than playing through the game on normal or hard difficulty. But I'm just saying, for me, that is that defeats the purpose in a lot of ways.
Many hurdles to cross.
What about like a real-time? Because sometimes I find real-time strategy games, and this could turn into a whole discussion on its own, like they're stressful, and it's too much sometimes for me to actually enjoy one because I'm so worried about like entering a fail state at half an hour into a mission that I have to like reload the whole entire mission instead of just like the last 10 minutes and just like lose that much time of my life playing that. And I hate that feeling so much. It almost like stops me from playing a lot of real-time strategy games.
That's what the save button is for.
I love that expression, though. I could just see you saying it to your therapist. I've entered a fail state.
Yeah, because you could totally like screw your economy up. What's wrong? Like an hour into the map, and now you have to go back like an hour.
Yeah, it depends on the game.
I know what you mean, though. I mean, that sort of connects with Dan's saying about modifying your experience to make it more of a toy or make it, you know, more pleasant to you. In the case where if I'm playing a strategy game, it's usually in the skirmish mode on a modest difficulty or a medium difficulty, just to feel empowered and build a bunch of stuff up and see it move into a base and destroy things. You know, is that playing the game? Is that overcoming obstacles? Is that the way it's meant to be played? I don't know, but that's the way I usually consume strategy games because it makes me feel empowered. It gives me that kind of experience that I'm looking for.
Right, but it's not, and you know, my problem with playing it like that is that there is no challenge to it at all. I mean, you are not accomplishing anything if your opponent is not really fighting back.
I don't think it doesn't have to be about accomplishing things, though. It can be about seeing the units in play, you know, seeing them move, understanding the map, understanding the mechanics, you know, just understanding the game. You don't have to feel like you're accomplishing anything.
Well, I'm just saying that for me, that doing that is it's fun to watch, but is it really, you know, playing the game the way it's kind of meant to be played?
There's no one way to play. Yeah,
I actually
they would
enjoy
offer
beating,
the easy mode if that was the case.
I enjoy beating people up when they don't fight back. I think it's fantastic. It's actually ideal.
And I go as far to say, I mean, this is getting away from your point, and this is not what you're saying, Dan, but modability and customizing your experience is a fundamental part of PC gaming that's incredibly valuable to me. I mean, Prentice and I were looking at a mod today where players, half a team plays as props in TF2 and they play hide and go seek and they basically just sit still like as a barrel in an environment and people have to come up and burn them. I mean, modding is so important and it's sort of an extension of what we're talking about, I think, that we need to consider.
No, that's not at all what I'm saying. And you said that's not what I'm saying. But yeah, it has nothing to do with what I'm saying, actually. Modding is, you know, a lot of fun. You can create other games from that. And just to reiterate, I'm not saying that on easy mode you are not playing the. I guess I may have said that.
well, I'm talking about like
not what I intended to say.
That's the quote I'm going to use from now on.
Okay. We're getting a lot of ammunition to use today.
I mean, we're getting a lot in the game theory, and this is a great conversation. But I guess I'm saying like the value of modding, like modding as an ideal. You know, customizing the experience, that's something that's fundamental to PC gaming, whether it is changing the code or whether it is changing the difficulty level.
Let's get into a playlist state. How about that?
All right.
I am playing Borderlands Day and Night.
Oh, you're cheating.
No, you're not. You're up to like level 7.
Well, what? I'm sorry. I don't have a lot of time. I have to go home. I have to eat. I have to, like, you know, clean my room. No, I like it more every time I play it, which is great. Because at first, I'm not into the whole RPG thing at all. I don't know why. I'm sort of RPG allergic. But I like it. It's enjoyable. I love the weapons. I like shooting things. It's just a nice change of pace from, you know, wearing a bat cape. those are my evenings, my little sliver of evenings. And what's wrong with level 9 anyway?
Nothing. I'm just saying
you're
not.
I like being at level 9. I like my friends. I like my family. I like that little robot.
Can you guys even talk about this? Is it still under embargo?
You can mention that.
All right.
I like my my little hedgehog. No, that's actually in the office right here. Can you hear that?
Oh, we can hear that.
We can hear it.
All right, I was just checking. Anyway, you know what, Evan? I would love to hear your playlist.
Well, I'm actually curious before we move on to Evan, how far into Batman are you at this point?
Oh, I finished it.
Oh yeah. What did you think of the ending battle? Because that is the part that has gotten the most criticism, I think.
I didn't think much. I didn't really like it, but by that time I had gotten 2/3 of the way through the game. I had like gotten my money's worth basically out of the experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't think it ended well, but by that time I didn't care. I loved it. I would, right. You know, I played it 1.5 times already and I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah. For me, the final boss battle without spoiling anything was, there was very little challenge to it. It was less of a fight than a lot of the previous boss
battles. Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah. It was the easiest.
The real boss battle was right before it.
You kind of expect a game like that to escalate, and it kind of de-escalated or declined, as you will.
Yeah. And it seemed very diminutive. Yeah.
Yeah. It was visually cool.
Yeah.
But it was not the battle you were really expecting.
Yeah. I didn't think it was very imaginative, but it was just such a magnificent game. By that time, I really didn't care. Yeah. You know, it's like the last few minutes of a game. Whatever.
And the ending battle did not suck. It just wasn't great. So.
Evan, what have you been playing? Tell us.
Yeah, I've been revisiting Unreal Tournament for an article we're doing that's very exciting. And just enjoying some of the original, I think it's the Assault Mode maps, where it's basically attack and defend. And if I'm correct, it was one of the first shooters to sort of roll that kind of mode out. And you can argue maybe it started a trend of maps of that type, but it's been fun. I just love the mutator system and throwing, you know, making a flak cannon only game because that's my favorite weapon. And
it's one of the greatest weapons of all time.
Yeah, putting out in low gravity and just floating in the air and firing. So that's what I've been doing pretty much.
Fantastic. Mr. Stapleton, how about you?
I've been playing a lot of Borderlands for review, but I'm not going to talk too much about that yet. Yeah, outside of that, I haven't had a lot of time for anything else. I haven't even had time to defend my Batman scores, but since nobody's challenging them, I don't really need to.
Well, I just didn't want to humiliate you. So, Andy, how about you? What have you been up to?
Yeah, I just barely finished Batman last night. Took long enough, I guess, like almost three weeks to get through it. But
geez. Yeah, but you really savored it, you know?
Yeah, like, it's so awesome. I love that game so much.
What do you think about the ending?
You know, I was the same with you, Logan. By the end, I was I was already satisfied with the combat and everything. So just another fight was fine. And
Exactly. That's exactly the way I felt.
Yeah, and any chance to fight in that game is brilliant, which is why I love the challenge mode so much.
Yeah, yeah. I can see why the challenge mode is appealing.
Prentice, what have you been up to?
My playlist is boring. Nothing new, just like TF2.
Or less with boring. TF2, all right.
Arma. Yeah. Arma.
Oh, nice.
Whoop. What's exciting in TF2 these days? What draws you back into it?
The mod Evan was talking about, the prop hunt.
Hmm. Yeah, it's like a hide. Why is that cool?
Because it's like a hide and seek type thing. You have to the two teams, and one of them is all the props in that map. So like if it's a farm, you know, you have like cutouts of cows or like a haystack, and you're that prop, and you have to like, you know, move around and hide in like a minute. And then the other team comes out, the pyros, but each time they shoot, they lose health. So it's kind of, you know, leads to this hide and seek thing where they're trying to tag you, but they can't waste too many shots or else, you know, they'll die because they take damage each time they try to attack. So, you know,
so are all the props in the level players or are you hiding amongst,
you're props? Hiding amongst other props.
Okay. So like, Why would you move?
Well, if they catch you.
But I mean, like, if you're just sitting there,
you start in like a spawn. So if no one moved, it would just be a giant collection of props.
Yeah, you have to go and hide.
Oh, okay. So you know, it would make that much more fun if when you fire when the hunting team fires their weapons, they don't lose any health and they can see where you are.
That would be kind of one-sided.
Oh wait, that would be easy. No, sorry. Okay, I'll drop that now.
And Eric, how about you?
Well, besides playing the game, why does Batman Arkham Asylum shut down my computer?
Because you were bad.
I guess. I've been trying to figure it out.
That's one of the Riddler's challenges. Riddle me this, Batman. Epic. Why is your computer shutting down?
That would be amazing if that was actually like a meta puzzle.
Yeah.
All right, we have ideas for Arkham Asylum 2 now. But
yes.
I've been playing and loving X3. The universe in that game is absurdly large. I guess the best game to liken it to as recent is like Freelancer by Microsoft. But it's much larger, and I've been working
much less arcadey.
I've been working on converting an old Xbox joystick for a game called Steel Battalion. It's like this 3 foot wide two joystick pedal thing into a HOTAS because it's USB powered. So that's been my project this week.
That's pretty ambitious.
Yeah, but there's like people on the internet who have done. Oh yeah.
Oh, we should give him all our soldering tasks. He's the intern.
I love soldering.
Fantastic. Well, we are wrapping up our holiday issue that includes the exclusive look at Bethesda and the Pipe Route 2 that everybody's been salivating for. While the Little Blue Elves gift wrap your issues at the post office, feel free to send us your questions in MP3 format to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. That's PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. Or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724. And record your question there and keep it short and clean, or the Little Blue Elves will make you sorry you didn't. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to PCGamer.com and clicking that sweet little button on the left side of the screen that says Subscribe. We're also looking for your coolest screenshots and photos of your gaming rigs. We wouldn't believe unless we saw them for ourselves. Send them to letters@PCGamer.com and you just might see your handiwork in the world-famous PC Gamer Letters section. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week.
I like to move it, move it.
Get on the fucking ball.
There we go. Yeah. Now he's good.
Oh, we haven't charged. That was something Jim was talking about.
I got him now, dude.
Because I want this to be the best podcast ever. But.
Therefore, I will sabotage it.
I can't do it alone.
All right, I won't talk then.
Are you guys with me?
You got the wrong group of people, man.
Yes? Yes or no? Come on. Come on. Are you with me?
Yes. Hurrah.
So late. No, I can explain that. That's not what it looks like. It was not used. Sorry. I swear to God, it wasn't used. I keep them in my car on the dash, right? And like I was putting the bag down that had the grapes in it, and one fell from the dashboard into there. You could tell it wasn't used because it wasn't shredded.
We have forensic evidence.
You could tell it wasn't used. If it was used, number one, they break when I use them. So, right there. Mm-hmm. And they look frayed. It was not.
What are you talking about?